The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
The Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
Moskowitz reports using a cell phone for more than 1,000 hours or about 17 minutes a day over a 10-year period increases the risk of tumors by 60%.
Yeah, that's a scary stat, isn't it? Amazing stuff. I want to talk about that coming up a little bit later. We'll dive into 5G cell phones and a whole lot more. That report, of course, came from Fox 11 LA regarding a study on cell phone use and cancer. I've heard about it for a long time. I've always been, to be honest with you, kind of skeptical about it because I love my cell phone and it's always against the side of my head. I'm not proud of that, but I'm on it all the time. You probably are too. And I've had people say, hey, don't keep it on your body. Keep it away. Keep it out of your front pocket. Keep it out of your back. Do use your speaker. So I try to do that. We'll talk about it coming up. 5G is here. The speeds are incredible. People are loving it. And we'll take a look at whether or not it's dangerous for you or not coming up. But speaking of health, the Holy Father, let's continue to pray for him. You heard last week he underwent surgery on Sunday. It was July 4th. He went in to remove part of his colon. He had a blockage that had developed there, and he was supposed to be released from the hospital this past Sunday, the 11th, but doctors decided to keep him for a few more days. And when that happens, and you are the age of the Holy Father, it always gives me pause. It makes me wonder, hey, how well is he? So, pray for the Pope. I know people, I was thinking about this today. I was driving in my car earlier this morning, and I was coming back from Mass, and I was thinking, I was praying for a whole litany of things, and I thought so many people like to throw stones at the church, right? They like to blame the Holy Father or their bishops or their cardinals or, whatever it may be. The reality is, have you prayed for them? I was thinking about that. You hear about the Holy Father? Have you prayed for him? He is the vicar of Christ here on earth. He deserves our prayers. He needs our prayers. Believe me, Satan has a tremendous enmity for him. So the Vatican hasn't released a new date for when he's going to be out and be up and about again. He has plans to do some traveling, so keep him in your prayers. But Rome reports took a look at his health, and here's just a quick snippet of what they're finding.
Pope Francis is continuing his planned treatment and rehabilitation at the Gemelli Hospital in Rome. According to a statement from the Vatican, he will return to the Vatican as soon as possible, but the exact date is still to be announced. The Vatican reports that Pope Francis has been visiting with hospital patients. He is also praying especially for those who are bedridden and are unable to go home.
All right, so I'm sure he is a victim soul suffering. I think of these great saints like St. Faustina, St. Bernadette of Subaru, St. Therese. But you go through the litany, Padre Pio, you name any of them. They were all deeply acquainted with suffering. And sometimes the most holy and most beloved by God, you wonder, why do they have to carry such heavy crosses? Why do they have to suffer so much? I think about St. Faustina, and I shared with you before the one time the Lord said to her, he loved her so much, he would create a whole new world for her. A whole new world. Think about that. He created the universe and all these worlds. He'd create one just for her. Be more beautiful. There'd be no suffering. She said, you can create 1,000 worlds, but it is you who I want, right? And I think about that. She understood suffering. She was willing to endure the greatest of sufferings if it meant moving one degree closer to God in eternity. And something I think we should all think about as we have our own sufferings, as we look at the suffering in the world as well. I don't know where you are physically right now, whether you are suffering or financially or emotionally or in your relationship. We'll pray coming up in about an hour, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. So set your watch right now, set your phone, and set a reminder. Make sure you join me. And if you have a need in your family, have your loved one join us too. They can stream the show at relevantradio.com or over the mobile app or listen on the station you're listening to. I had the great opportunity of traveling to Colombia a couple of years ago. And my wife loves coffee. She probably loves it more than me. I love coffee too. Coffee's good. But if you are a coffee lover, you may want to turn up the phone. I have a little bit of bad news for you. I don't like to bring bad news, but you better be prepared to pay more for your favorite drink. And it's not just because of inflation. The Wall Street Journal today, they were reporting that Brazil, the world's largest coffee producer, they've seen a severe drought for the last several months, and it has shriveled the amount of coffee beans that they've been able to produce. So prices on the wholesale level of Arabica, they've risen now 18% in just the last 3 months. Prices for Robusta, they've gone up 30%. And one coffee grower said that she normally takes about 3 months to harvest all of her beans. This year, it took her just 1 month. So if you've noticed coffee prices have gone up, there are a variety of factors for it. And one of them is the drought. Here are a few others. This report comes from ABC News.
Coffee prices have spiked 18% in just the last 3 months, and there are really three key reasons here. First of all, a drought in Brazil, the world's largest producer of coffee beans. If you see Arabica written on the side of your beans, there's a good shot they came from Brazil. But this year, farmers there say they are expecting the worst harvest in 20 years. The second issue is shipping costs. They have risen around the globe in light of the pandemic, and even though Colombia and Vietnam have coffee beans, the shipping costs make them more expensive and in some cases impossible to even get here to the United States. Finally, we're drinking more coffee. We drank a lot of it in the pandemic at home. As cafes are reopening, people want to be social again. They're going out. That sends demand up, and in turn, prices are rising. Now, where you might not have yet seen the price increases are at grocery stores, because the roasters have tried to not increase prices yet. You might have seen it already at your grocery store. Where you have seen it very likely is at your local coffee shop, where prices are now $4.50 on average. That is up from $3.90 5 years ago.
Yeah, and it continues to rise. I mean, coffee is sold in what they call 132-pound bags, and the USDA is expecting the number produced this year to fall short about 15 million of those bags. There was a Dutch bank that estimates it's going to be 17 million short, and there's a brokerage firm I was reading about earlier today. It says that about could be as big as 23 million bags short. So that means the cost of your coffee is going to skyrocket. Part of me is thinking, do you get it now? I don't know if you're a coffee lover. Patrick Alog, who's on the boards with me today, he's my producer. He's saying he doesn't drink coffee. I know a lot of people don't. There are people who don't. And, you know, I never had a deep appreciation for it. I mean, I began drinking it right after I got out of college and started to work and got married. My wife loved it. And soon I began to enjoy it. But I didn't enjoy it until I took that trip to Colombia. And when I was in Colombia, I was with Catholic Relief Services. We went into the Andy Mountains. We saw how it was grown. We saw how it was dried. We saw it was roasted. And then I had an opportunity to be with, as there are sommeliers to wine, those who can taste the flavors and the tannins and everything in the wine and tell you, this tastes like blackberry with an undercurrent of cherry and tennis ball. You know, they come up with these weird things and with the wine, you know, but they can really taste and unpack the wine. They have the same thing with coffee. Coffee's the same way. I mean, your low-grade coffee, you may hate because you drink a low-grade coffee. Some of the higher-end coffees are very, very different, and I was there for a coffee tasting where they had these cuppers who would do these blind taste tests of different cups of coffee, and boy, could they tell. And I left that country with some, you know, gold star coffee, some really high-end stuff, and I'll tell you what, I fell in love with coffee afterwards. But I hope coffee doesn't go up. I also heard chocolate might have the same thing. Some people are blaming climate change on this in some of the regions where they grow coffee, so we'll see what the future holds. One other story here, too, I think is important to ask you to pray for, and just to keep you in the loop on. The U.S. bishops are pretty upset right now about the appropriations bill that's being marked up in the House committee, because right now it has no protections against taxpayer-funded abortions. You know, I was saying actually to this to my wife this morning over a cup of coffee. So I was reading the news. I was saying, what the heck is the matter with these people? How can you be so anti-life, anti-country? I just don't get it. I just don't. I have a real problem with this. It lacks reason. So the House Committee on Appropriations is making up the Labor, Health, and Human Services, Education, and Related Agencies Appropriations Bills this week. So Cardinal Timothy Dolan, who I'm sure you know, great cardinal there in New York, and Archbishop Joseph Nauman, here's what these two great cardinals have said. And bishops, I really should say, they're both bishops as well. Archbishop Nauman said, it's the most extreme pro-abortion appropriations bill that we have seen. It effectively mandates healthcare professionals to participate in abortion. And it forces American citizens to pay for abortions with their tax dollars. And that's really the heart of this. That's what this really is all about. And I think, man, you nailed it. It is extreme. And what are we seeing? If you're in the healthcare industry, and I have a lot of friends who are physicians, That's a tough field, and nurses as well. Those of you who are nurse practitioners and others, he's going to mandate that healthcare professionals participate in abortion. I'd leave my job first, right? And they may see that. And it forces you, a citizen of this nation, where we believe that every American being has an inalienable right to life and to liberty and to the pursuit of happiness. This was given to us by our Creator, right? That's being stripped from us. And you are being forced to pay for abortion with your tax dollars. I've always had an issue with that. Pro-life groups right now, of course, they're upset, saying, hey, this bill would effectively subsidize abortion on demand with my money, with your money, with taxpayer dollars. So it's not clear if the bill is going to be able to get through the Senate. I pray to God it won't. You know, that's a pretty tight Senate right now, because you have at least one Democratic senator, Joe Manchin from West Virginia. He's probably, you know, not going to want to fight his constituency on this issue. So I don't know how it's all going to shake out. The Hyde Amendment, too. One other thing here is still being fought for in the halls of Congress. Here's what Congressman Dusty Johnson from South Dakota had to say in Congress about the amendment just a couple days ago. Listen.
50 million, Madam Speaker. The WHO estimates that 50 million abortions are performed each year. It is a soul-rendering number. Now, of course, abortion is a deeply divisive legal, political, and moral dispute. But despite that fact, for 45 years, this body has been able to come together to accept the powerful message of the Hyde Amendment, that taxpayer funding should never be used for abortion. When I think about what we can do together, that is a powerful message.
Yeah, so we are in a fight for life in this country. We really are. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. We need well-formed legislators. We need people who are willing to go ahead and to stand up for what is right and true and good and be willing to fulfill their duty, you know, as legislators to do that. It frustrates me to see where we are. You might remember a couple of years ago, some Republican state legislators in Oregon, they fled the state, right, in order to try to prevent the passage of a climate change bill that would have impacted a number of the industries there, including the timber industry. And the reason they fled is that even though, you know, the Democrats held a supermajority in the Senate, they needed Republicans there in order to meet their quorum, the minimum number of legislators needed under the law to do their business, right? That's what the quorum is. So the tactic, it ultimately failed. But it makes, I think, some pretty good theater. You know, it depends on what side of the aisle you're on when someone is doing it. The theater now has transitioned from Oregon to the South, and Democrats in Texas, they fled the state. You probably have heard about this if you caught any of the news over the past couple of days. They hopped into some private jets so they can deny quorum to the Republican majority Senate that wants to vote on a voting bill. And the governor of Texas, Governor Greg Abbott, he called a special session of the legislature because Democrats had pulled the same trick during the regular session, and they weren't able to hold a vote on a bill that would, you know, make it harder to cheat but easier to vote, right? So the bill would require voter ID for mail-in voting, among some of the other reforms. And the legislators who fled in the jet, they went to Washington to meet fellow Democrats who want to get rid of the filibuster in the U.S. Senate. Senator Ted Cruz, when he heard about this, he was not happy either. Here's what he had to say. He was on Fox News a little bit earlier today.
Governor Abbott said last night on local TV in Texas, he said, I will call a special session after special session after special session until election of next year. I don't know if that's the fate here, but how does this end, do you think, with lawmakers leaving the state?
Well, I think it's going to end with the Texas legislature taking up and passing election integrity legislation. What you're seeing the Democrats do here is a political stunt. And, you know, I will say it's ironic, as they were getting on their private jet to fly to Washington, D.C., they almost surely had to show identification to get on that jet. And yet they're doing this in a fit because they don't want mail-in ballots to be verified. They don't want the signatures to be verified. They don't want basic integrity steps to be strengthened in the state of Texas. This is, at the end of the day, politics, and they need to get back to doing their jobs. And one way or the other, they will. And so this stunt is going to fail. They're going to come back. There's going to be a quorum. And I believe the legislature is going to do its job and protect the integrity of elections, ensure people can vote, but also ensure that we don't have fraud. We don't have people casting illegal votes.
Yeah. So I'm joined right now by Matt Makowiak. He is the president of the Potomac Strategies Group in Austin, Texas. And he joins us today. Good to have you with us today, Matt. Thank you for your time. Yeah, what issue does Governor Abbott want the legislature to address? Maybe unpack that for the rest of the country.
Yeah, so it's election integrity legislation, not unlike what you've seen in Georgia and other states where there's been really, I think, just hysterical overreaction to what's actually being proposed. You know, what happened in Texas in the 2020 election is that we had one county clerk in Harris County that was installed 4 months before the election. He had no history ever working in an election. He was a Democratic fundraising operative. And he was put in place to try to do the kind of things that we saw in places like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Nevada, you know, ballot harvesting, unsolicited mail ballots, extending early voting, all those kinds of things, using the emergency of COVID as the justification for that. Whether those are good ideas or not is secondary to whether it's legal or not. And all of those things were illegal. They go against state law, and that's why the Texas Attorney General sued something like 13 times and won all 13 lawsuits. So what Texas Republicans are trying to do is ensure that those kind of emergency provisions cannot be used in the future. You know, if you want to affect the way elections are conducted in Texas, you have one option. You can pass a law. That's not what the Democrats in the Texas House are doing. They're fleeing the state so that they can prevent the House from meeting because it breaks a quorum. But they're eventually going to have to come back. In October, we're likely to have a special session on redistricting. They're not going to skip that. So it's really a question of how long do they want to live in Washington, D.C., living off fundraising and donor money, living in a hotel and eating cold sandwiches.
Yeah, no, that's really true. How long is the special session supposed to last?
Our special sessions are at maximum 30 days. And the governor said, as you pointed out, he would call unlimited special sessions from now until the election next year. So this is really a fairly hollow bluff, I think. At the end of the day, it's a weak bluff. As long as the Republicans don't fold, the Democrats are going to have to fold. They're going to get tired of living in D.C. They're away from their families, away from their businesses, away from their homes. Having worked in D.C. for 10 years, I can tell you, you do not want to be there in late July and early August, mid-August, when the humidity is absolutely horrendous on top of that swamp. So it feels to me like they were trying to increase their own leverage and try to force the governor and Republicans to negotiate. As long as they don't negotiate, Republicans are going to win. It may not be in the next 30 days, but it's going to be in the next couple months.
I was just wondering, you know, how is this going to play out in the elections? I mean, they're right around the corner. How do Texans feel about their legislators not doing their civic duty, fulfilling the mandate that they've been charged with by the voter? Will it have any will have any implication or not?
Yeah, I think it will. You know, I think, look, it's the summer. People aren't paying attention. Their kids are home. They got camps. They got vacations. They got projects at the house. I mean, it's not a time when people are paying a lot of attention to the news. That said, it's really hard to justify leaving your job. They're still getting paid, getting on a private jet, putting Miller Lite on it, and staying in a cushy hotel in Washington, not doing the job that you were elected to. Look, if you want to work in Washington, you've got to run for Congress. You've run for the state legislature. That job's in Austin, not in Washington. Right. And so, you know, if you want to affect an outcome with a legislative outcome, then you do the work. You know, you meet in committee, you offer amendments, you work on the floor, you work across the aisle. That's what it takes. Flying on a private jet to D.C. is not how you do that. And I just don't think, I think it's very, very un-Texan to sort of cut and run the way the Democrats have, at least these Democrats have, at this time. But they're going to have to make the argument that this bill was so bad, this is the only option they had. I think that's a weak argument, because when you understand the substance of what's being proposed, this outlaws ballot harvesting, it allows drive-through voting when the sanctity of the ballot place is not secure. It outlaws unsolicited mail ballots going out when people don't know whether the data is accurate or not. It makes it very, very, very hard to cheat and very easy to vote legally.
Well, a lot of people are claiming that the bills will negatively impact minority voters, even those in rural areas, because they supposedly can't get to places. It's so weird that have copy machines, right? That's some of the claims. I heard Kamala Harris make that the other day, but what about the claims that are coming from the other side? I mean, any merit to those? Any validity?
I would say, just to be fair, that this thing was rushed at the end of the regular session, and there were a couple mistakes that were in there. There was a mistake that would allow a local official to overrule an election. That's been taken out. There was something having to do with what hours voting could begin on Sunday. I think that's been now gone back to the way it was. So there were a couple minor errors there, and the Democrats pointed those out at the time, and I thought those were fair things to point out. At the end of the day, again, this bill is not what they're claiming it to be. It doesn't suppress anyone's right to vote. We had massive, you got to remember this, we had massive historic turnout in November of 2020 in Texas, and none of the things the Democrats want were in operation because they lost every lawsuit that was filed, right? So we worked under existing state law and had massive, record-breaking presidential turnout, and that's what's going to happen again.
Hey, Matt, thank you. Thanks for giving us some clarity on the issue. It was great talking with you today. We'll see how this all plays out. That is Matt Kowayak. He is the president of the Potomac Strategy Group in Austin, Texas, and I thought it'd be important to take a look at, well, ultimately how this is playing out. It was Oregon. Now it's Texas. It could be another state soon. Coming up in a minute, I want to talk to you a little bit about your cell phone, too. You know, we are, our bodies are the temples of the Holy Spirit, right? We have to be good stewards of them. That's why a lot of people argue against smoking, making sure you stay fit, watching what you eat, et cetera. For years, there have been these scattered studies that have indicated that your cell phones are relatively new, right? We've only had them for a relatively short period of time. And there are beliefs, in fact, there are studies that claim that cell phone use can lead to elevated cancer, especially tumors of the brain, such as glioblastomas, right? Which, you know, with the possible exception of pancreatic cancer, is one of the deadliest malignancies that there is. But the phone studies took place from the U.S. and Canada to other parts of Europe and Japan, and most indicated a link to cancer, but they were small in scale, and they had very little impact. The mainstream media seemed to slough them off, mainly because I think oncologists and medical experts were doing likewise. So, you know, we didn't want to, you know, want to hype something that, you know, may not be true. But now comes a far larger survey. This one comes from the University of California at Berkeley, which is one of the nation's most prestigious schools for public health. And a team of researchers there, they relied only on a single study, but a comprehensive look at statistical findings from 40 different ones around the world. The study is absolutely telling, and I want to bring you up to speed on it. But let me share with you right now a report from Fox 11 LA that has come out about the link of cell phones to cancer. Check this out.
Startling findings from UC Berkeley School of Public Health's Joel Moskowitz, who has been studying cell phone radiation and its effects since 2009. Moskowitz reports using a cell phone for more than 1,000 hours, or about 17 minutes a day, over a 10-year period, increases the risk of tumors by 60%, particularly brain tumors.
Especially in the frontal and temporal lobes where people hold their cell phone.
Moskowitz also says since cell phone manufacturers have designed smartphones with built-in antennas, most in the lower portion of the device, researchers have noted an increase in thyroid cancer.
If you hold it up to your ear, you'll see the lower part of the phone is more proximal to the neck now.
Meanwhile, the Food and Drug Administration, which shares regulatory responsibilities for cell phones with the Federal Communications Commission, says there is no consistent or credible scientific evidence of health problems caused by the exposure to radio frequency energy emitted by cell phones.
We have a case of the blind leading the blind in Washington now.
Why?
Because there's a lot of political and economic clout by this industry. This industry is far more powerful than the tobacco industry ever was.
Still, Moskowitz hopes his findings serve as a wake-up call for the 97% of Americans estimated to have a cell phone.
Distance is your friend when you're using the phone.
He suggests these safety tips: text when you can, but if not, opt for the speakerphone or a wired headset. When your phone is on, don't keep your phone on your body. That means pockets are a no-no. When the signal is weak, he says the phone is working harder and emitting more radiation, so don't use it when it has minimal bars. Lastly, keep your phone 10 inches away from you.
I think about that all the time. My cell coverage where I live is horrible. My bars are low, and I'm thinking, man, that phone is cranking. And I try to put my phone on speaker as much as I can. My wife's always like, why is your phone on speaker? Turn your speaker off, you know, because, you know, it's loud. And, of course, we tell our callers, hey, stay off the speaker, right? We want a good, clear sound when you give us a call. But the study, what it found in their meta-analysis was that the use of a cell phone for more than, let's say, 1,000 hours, that's about 17 minutes a day over a 10-year period. I know I use my phone more than 17 minutes a day. I don't know what your time consumption is. It will increase the risk of tumors, check this number out, by 60%. By 60%. So ask God to heal and to protect and to guide you. I'm going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll take a look at this study. We'll take a look at 5G technology. We'll take a look at your cell phones. If you want to get in, if you have a question or a concern, you can dial in at 888-914-9149. We'll be back with more right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com. Getting you connected. This is The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome back. It's great to be here with you today. If you are using a cell phone, maybe you're thinking about upgrading your cell phone, you want a little more speed. Maybe you're loving this 5G technology. You may want to turn up the radio. I want to take a look at 5G, your cell phone, your health, and some studies that have come out. I'm sure you've seen the ads all over the place right now for new cell phones that are 5G capable. And look, with those phones, with this new system, you're going to be able to download an entire movie in seconds. I mean, literally, seconds. Right now, I think some of the technology might take you half an hour or more, right? Video calls are not going to be so jittery. Your calls aren't going to drop as easily as maybe they do right now. And all that's great, right? Who doesn't want that? I love it. Well, here's a serious question. What's going to be the cost for this? And I don't mean dollars. What is going to be the cost to your health? And here's why I'm asking this. There's a new report out from the University of California, Berkeley. It shows that the majority of studies that have been done on cell phone radiation, both from the phones themselves as well as from these towers that are emitting these signals, right? Well, they're finding that they have negative effects on people. And the scary part is kind of a negative effect on your brain. It can induce brain cancer. Now, I'm not here to scare you. I use my phone all the time. It's always against my head. I can't imagine not having my cell phone with me. I use it for GPS, for streaming, for everything, right? In a minute, Dr. Martin Paul is going to be stopping by. He's been with me in the past. And we're going to take a look at this. And if you've got a question or a concern, he's one of the foremost experts on it. And I thought as this 5G technology becomes ever-present in our lives, I just want to bring you up to speed, make sure you're in the know. In the know, I should say. Look, this is a multi-billion dollar industry. And that's something I think we always have to look at, too. You know, who benefits from this and you know, what's the trade-off? They did this study. It's been done by a reputable scholar at a highly respected institution. And it's been ignored by the mainstream media. But his paper has been peer-reviewed, and it says that not only is the radiation from previous generations of phones bad, but that 5G is actually worse. Okay, you might want to upgrade your phone, right? Maybe you're thinking about it. Maybe you're looking at the 5G. Maybe you just got it. Turn up the radio. We'll talk about it. Get you up to speed on what you need to know. And again, use your discernment. Dr. Martin Paul is a professor emeritus of biochemistry and basic medical sciences at Washington State University, an expert on the impact of electromagnetic fields on your health. And he's here today to give us some clarity. Doctor, I appreciate your expertise. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining me again.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just start with the basics for those that might just be tuning in. This might be new. They might be hearing this for the first time. How much radiation does a cell phone actually emit? And you know, wouldn't the FDA or some sort of other agency, if they knew it was cancer-causing, have put some sort of restrictions on or at least limits on how close you can have it or how many minutes? What do we know? How much radiation does it emit, and how harmful is it?
You know, that question actually is not a very important one. It's not the amount of radiation that is important. It's the type of radiation. It's the peak intensities that are produced that are important. The average intensity really has almost nothing to do with biological effects. But average intensities is what the safety guidelines are based on. So they're based on something that really don't make any sense. And
Well, give me the 101 then. I mean, yeah. I have a cell phone in my pocket all day long. Sometimes it's over my heart, my shirt pocket, so it's my pants pocket. People use it all day to communicate. People have gotten rid of their landlines.
Yeah.
How much exposure to a cell phone is deleterious, if at all? And maybe explain the science behind it. I mean, what's harmful about it, and what should we know?
Well, you know, let me give you some examples of of some studies that have been done. There have been studies done on human sperm. And it's found that people who carry cell phones in their front pockets have a dramatic decline in motility, wow, in the numbers of sperm, in the structure. So it's very common now for only something like 4% of the sperm, human sperm, in populations to be morphologically normal.
Wow.
Most of them are grossly abnormal. Now, and we know that the EMFs from cell phones and other kinds of EMFs as well can produce those effects, because there have been studies done where you take a semen sample and you split it in half and you irradiate half of it with, say, cell phone radiation or Wi-Fi or other things. And what happens? The abnormalities go way up when they get irradiated. So this is an experimental study where you see clear, unequivocal causation in human sperm.
Wow.
Now, that's just one of many types of cells that come from our body, right? And basically all the cells are impacted. Not equally well. I mean, some cells are much more sensitive than others, but they're all impacted. And we know how these things work. We know how they produce biological effects. All of this stuff is ignored by the industry. And much more tragically is ignored by the regulatory agencies that are supposed to be protecting us.
Those industries, though, they'll come out and they'll claim the products are safe, that the waves produced by them can't get past your skin. So two questions on that. First, is it true? But secondly, if it does penetrate into the skin, what's it do to your largest organ? And maybe address those issues.
Okay. Well, so first of all, the penetration of the EMFs is a function of the wavelength. And so it is the case that millimeter waves, which are used for 5G, don't penetrate as well as 4G, which doesn't penetrate as well as 3G and 2G and so forth. So, but the penetration is only one part of it, and it only involves the electrical parts of the EMFs. The magnetic parts are all highly penetrating, whether you're talking about 5G, 4G, and they do produce effects in the body, the time-varying magnetic parts. And so they can basically impact any cell in the body, no matter where it is. And we know that from, you know, experimental studies. Let me give you another example of a study that was done. There was a couple of studies that were done by Professor Hessig and his colleagues in Switzerland, where they were studying pregnant cattle grazing near what we call a cell phone tower. They call them mobile phone base stations in Europe. And what happened was that a large fraction of the newborn calves were born with cataracts. So here you have the fetus of the calf buried very deeply in the mother's body, and the industry says, oh, it can't possibly have any effects, but it does. So the industry makes these claims all the time that are wrong. And a lot of them have to do with penetration. And the penetration, the deep penetration, is produced by the time-varying magnetic fields. They do produce biological effects.
Right. Let's do this. Let's take a call or two for you, too, Doctor. If you want to join us, the number here is 888-914-9149. Taking a look at 5G technology, some recent studies, possible link to cancer. I'm joined by Dr. Martin Paul. Tommy is listening to us in Las Vegas, Nevada. He wants to join the conversation. Tommy, hi. You're on the air with Dr. Paul.
Hey, how's it going there?
Great.
Really love your show.
Thanks.
Yeah, right. I got a question regarding Bluetooth technology.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So is there any correlation to the cancer research or study regarding a Bluetooth frequency or Bluetooth waves that can do the same thing as a 4G or 5G?
I think Bluetooth can produce effects. The practical question is it better to be use Bluetooth than to have direct radiation from, say, your cell phone, for example? And I don't know the answer to that, so I can't really tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But all these things are problematic. They're none of them are safe in any sense. So whether you're talking about cell phones, you're talking about cordless phones, you're talking about smart meters, you're talking about the cell phone towers, you're talking about Bluetooth, they all, and Wi-Fi, they all have effects.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of them has effects. And and they do impact our brains, which is my number one concern, mm-hmm. is the impact on the human brain. They do impact our reproductive function. They do impact the electrical control of the heart and produce life-threatening consequences. And these have been studied experimentally in animals, and in some cases they've been studied experimentally in humans. And then we have also epidemiological studies in humans. So, it's we have a lot of data on a lot of different things, and including a lot of things I haven't even mentioned.
It really is amazing. I know so many people today, more than ever, who are having reproductive issues. Fertility is through the roof, and I never connected it to, to cell phone technology. I thought it must have been something else, but that would make sense because both male and females carry these on their person as well as around them. How safe is having a cell phone next to your bed? A lot of people use it as an alarm clock, or the phone rings at night. They want to make sure they can hear their kids call, so it's on the nightstand. I've heard you have to have it 5-6 feet away, but your nightstand is probably an arm's length away, so that's a lot shorter than that. How close is too close? Maybe I should rephrase that.
Well, almost anything is too close. But one of the things about these EMFs that has been again studied extensively is that the relationship between intensity.
Yep.
And biological effects is extremely complex. And specifically, what's been shown is that there are what have been called exposure windows. These are specific ranges of intensity of a particular radiation. I'm not talking, I'm not saying what kind of radiation, but where people study a particular intensity and find in this intensity range you get maximum effects. And when you go, when you go lower or higher, they drop way down.
Right.
So, we think that high intensity always produces bigger effects, but in fact it's not true.
Yeah.
And one of the, one of the studies that I looked at, they went from a exposure window to, 150 times higher intensity, and it was still much lower effects. at 150 times higher intensity. So these things are very complex, and there are just not simple answers. And the other thing that we know, and again, this is very important, is that the pulsation is important in producing biological effects. So all wireless communication devices,
right,
with the sole exception of FM radio, communicate via pulsation. These are modulating pulses. And what the modulating pulses do is they produce much higher peak intensities.
Right.
And it's probably those peak intensities that are much more important than the average intensity, which really tells you almost nothing.
Well, Doctor, I'll tell you, hold the thought. I have to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll dive into the phones, take a few more calls. If you're seeing a rise in anxiety, depression, maybe memory or sleep problems, can it be linked to your 5G or to your 4G or your 3G or your cell phone? Dr. Paul believes that we're seeing a rise in those because of that. We'll look at that question as well. You might see this in your children. Stay with me. That conversation and more continues right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Trying to stay up on the headlines? The Drew Mariani Show is here for you. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It's great to be able to give you a look at life through the eyes of our faith and get you plugged into perhaps issues or stories or news you may not hear elsewhere. One of the issues that I just want to bring to your attention, look, I'm leaving it up to your discernment, but I brought to you today a very competent expert in the area, a man who has written and published articles in the journal Environmental Research entitled Wi-Fi is an Important Threat to Your Health. We haven't even talked Wi-Fi yet. If you're just joining me, we're talking about new 5G networks that are being rolled out in cities all across the country. The promise, of course, is that this tech's going to bring, you know, you greater connectivity, faster speeds, you know, download movies in seconds as opposed to taking, you know, half an hour or more. Wall Street Journal, has been reporting on this, and I saw a couple stories over the past year or two about these networks where they're going to find increase in speed up to 25 times what you are currently getting. And I know that sounds attractive. A lot of people love it, but for all the speed that you're getting, is there a trade-off, and is that trade-off your health? Let me just share with you something very quickly here, and I want to jump back into the phones, and we can talk more about this. I was reading online a couple different disclaimers. For example, for legal reasons, apparently acknowledging the hazard of cell phone manufacturers, on the iPhone, it tells you, it includes a caution in their settings of the device, not to use them close to your body, especially on the head. You know, where else are you going to use your cell phone, right? And it tells you there's settings for RF exposure. And it says to reduce exposure to RF energy, use the hands-free option, such as the built-in speakerphone, headphones, or similar accessories. Google, here's what they say, ensure that the device accessories, such as the device case and device holster, are not composed of metal components. Keep the device away from your body to meet distance requirements. Here's Samsung's website. Organizations such as the World Health Organization and U.S. Food and Drug Administration have suggested that people are concerned and want to reduce their exposure. They could use a hand-free accessory to keep the wireless device away from their head and body during use and reduce the amount of time spent on the device. So how many know that cellular companies are issuing these warnings? You don't get it when you walk into the store, right? No, they want to sell you the phone the fastest. You don't know that Samsung's new case includes technology to reduce radiation, because they're aware of it. I think that's a bit telling, right? I think that's a bit telling. I'm joined this afternoon, as I said, by Dr. Martin Paul, and he's been with me in the past. He's concerned about reproductivity, how these cell phones, how these electromagnetic fields can impact your sperm and your fertility. He's an expert on the impacts of electromagnetic fields on your health, and he also, I believe, I remember a conversation I had with him before, has concerns about the rise that we're seeing in our culture today amongst anxiety and depression. How many of you have loved ones that are suffering with anxiety or depression? Raise your hand. There's a lot, right? How about memory or sleep problems? Could that be the result of your cell phone? Or what about that 5G router in your home? Doctor, it's good to have you back. Thanks for sounding the alarm and using your expertise to bring us some clarity here. Let's start with that. I cannot tell you how many millennials have anxiety and depression. And I think that's the generation that grew up with these cell phones. And I'm just wondering if that is having some sort of impact on their brain or something else that is causing these issues. I know a lot of people struggle with sleep as well. What impact does a cell phone or a router in the home, the Wi-Fi, have on those factors or those situations?
Yeah, let me say, I published a paper in 2016 on the neurological and neuropsychiatric effects of EMFs generally. And what I showed in that paper was that there are many, many studies that have shown that there are widespread neurological and neuropsychiatric effects of EMFs, and they typically fall into the kinds of patterns that you just talked about. Can't sleep, I'm tired all the time, I've got headaches, I'm depressed, I'm anxious, memory dysfunction, a lack of concentration, et cetera, et cetera. All the things that we seem to be complaining about. Excuse me. So, when we have all this stuff, and let me just say, I was not the first person to review literature on this. There have been other people who have done this. What was different about my paper was both the breadth of the studies, but also the fact that there is a compelling understanding of how these things are produced, and based on the impacts of the EMFs on the neurons in the brain. So I think that, I think we have a good understanding of all these things. And, the peculiar thing about this is that, on the one hand, you have, for instance, schools introducing Wi-Fi all over the place.
Yeah.
And then they find, we've got all these behavioral problems.
Yep.
The children aren't learning very well, et cetera.
Yep.
Well, if you have memory and memory impact and anxiety and depression, what do you expect? And lack of concentration, what do you expect? And you tell school boards about this, and they look at you like you're some kind of a nutcase, that they should be concerned about the learning of their children.
Well, let's do this, Doctor. School. We only have a few minutes. Let's grab a couple quick calls. Fran's listening in Lexington, Kentucky, and she has sensitivity to, I think, her phone. Fran, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, Drew. Thank you for taking my call. Hi, Dr. Paul. I just have a couple comments. I've suffered with EMF for many, many years, 10, 13 years, and it is a horrible, horrible, debilitating thing that happens. It feels like you're being burnt from the inside out. And at certain points in time in my illness, it feels like all my nerve endings are erect, and it's being sandpaper, sanded with sandpaper, and it's very painful. And so, I went to a doctor and I told them, I think something's wrong whenever I get close to, a cell tower or a Wi-Fi. And he suggested I see a psychiatrist. And after that, I was afraid to tell anyone because of, then the way he looked at me, it was like I had two heads, and thankfully, right. I have friends that, have taken me serious and right. have really helped me in my journey with this. But I will tell you that one friend recommended taking a lot of vitamin C, and she's a nurse, and nothing in 13 or 12 to 13 years have I ever had anything that helped as well as high doses of vitamin C, good quality vitamin C.
Yeah.
Well, great. Let me let the doctor, Fran, respond to you because we only have a minute or two left. And let me say, is there a solution to her problem? Does C resolve this, or what do you know?
What I know is, first of all, what's being talked about is called electromagnetic hypersensitivity, EHS. This is a real phenomenon. And in the latest paper that I published, I showed that it was caused by EMF exposure. That is, the basic sensitivity is caused by the exposure, in addition to the exposure then triggering the sensitivity responses. And I discussed in that paper how you can actually test for EHS. This is a theoretical test at this point, but it's based on real literature of how EHS works. And so, you know, with regard to treatment, you know, I'm not aware of studies on high dose vitamin C, but I'm not surprised that it might be helpful. I think there are other things that may well be helpful that raise the level of what's called NRF2, NRF number 2. Let me just say I'm a PhD, not an MD, so nothing I say.
Dr. Ludney, with your research, because I have less than a minute here too, Mary, who's in Evanston, Illinois, says she's living near a cell phone tower. Is there a danger being underneath or in the range of those things?
Of course. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what.
And you don't even have to live that near. You can be within 400 meters of a cell phone tower and have impact.
Doctor, I'll tell you what. I've only scratched the surface of this. I have to take a break. I'll have to bring you back so we can dive back into it. A lot of people standing by to talk to you, but I've got to leave it there for the day. Thank you for your time. Great to talk with you again. I do appreciate it.
Sure. Okay.
That's Dr. Martin Paul. Stay with me. The chaplain is straight ahead.